Welcome to the first episode of the Tech Exec series with Nui Tech People. On today's episode, we have Andrew Cresp, CIO at NGM Group. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks for inviting me.
Mate, for those of our audience that don't know who you are, especially new to the Newcastle market or outside of Newcastle, mate, can you give a bit of background of who you are and where your background has led to this CIO role?
Yeah, so I've basically been working in financial services most of my career, so Insurance Australia Group. Then I jumped into NAB, sort of mainly infrastructure, then payments for a little while. And probably the biggest thing at NAB I did was, run the core banking program there for about 5 years. It was about $250 million to $350 million a year. I always say that I used to have a fringe before that program. Yeah. Core banking's pretty insane. And then, came across a really good opportunity with Bendigo Adelaide Bank as the CIO there. We were able to get some great modernisation and simplification done. We basically, in 4.5 years, halved the amount of applications, moved from 8 core banking systems to 3. I think we moved about 50% of the workloads to cloud. So, really, really good times there. And, I had 6 months off in between the gigs and thought about it. And there's a guy, Jeff Walsh, who's a great executive coach, who I just rang one day and I said, I don't know what I'm going to do next. And he said, what do you love doing? And I sort of thought about it and thought, I really like working for regional organisations, making them relevant. I was born in country South Australia, moved around country South Australia. So, and my sister's actually a doctor and she spends her time travelling around country towns in Queensland and Tasmania, actually. Sort of helping out there. So I think if you're brought up in the regions, sort of sticks with you. And it's just a really good opportunity, I think.
My two key themes there are third, financial services and regional. Getting the regional part in a second. Mm-hmm. But was the financial services industry, was that on purpose? Was that set? Did you have a vision that you always wanted to play in that space or just sort of luck out that way?
No, I was working in basically what would be called a contact center today, and a job came up in the computer ops area. Yeah. And I applied for it and thought, that looks pretty good. And sort of started off, always sort of had an interest in the IT side of things, but I'd love to say it was really purposeful, but it wasn't. And then even at IAG, like, we just kept on getting acquired by organizations, but they sort of liked how we went about integrating organizations. So I thought I'd rebel for a while and work in insurance, then got into banking and just really enjoyed the intensity of it. Like when I was looking after payments at NAB, we were processing 50, 80, 100 billion a night. And that's a big responsibility
the big numbers.
Yeah, on the bank, but also there were times where we got it wrong and the country couldn't balance. You sort of realise the impact, the opportunity for a positive impact when you get it right. So
yeah, I promise we'll get back to the regional part in a sec, but yeah. Financial services, you just mentioned some big numbers there. What's the biggest challenge that you found playing in that banking space? Is it just the pure size and the weight and the importance of what you're actually doing?
Yeah, I think scale gives you an opportunity to, if you get 1% wrong, that it gets really big really quickly on you. And I think about one of the big outages we faced at NAB. We're sort of dealing with 100,000 batch jobs a night. And if they sort of got a bit out of sync, and when things are moving and things are expected to keep moving and you've got to deal with that complexity, it's probably the biggest challenge. And the ability to obviously to work with and trust really highly capable people who understand the implications of that, but occasionally goes wrong.
Yeah. On the flip side of those implications, obviously big opportunity to actually make changes for big change and make changes on scale. And I understand you had a really positive experience at Bendigo with actually making some really positive changes. I'd love to just dig into that role. Where was Bendigo when you went in there? And then what was that experience like by the time you left?
Yeah, so the organisation was basically had tried to do a number of simplification and modernisation programs and just hadn't been able to get there. And so the advantage, and the organisation also knew that running 8 banks was really hindering them. So the advantage of coming into that organisation was they were sort of at a loss, and which and gave me a great deal of empowerment. So Vicky Carter on the board and Marnie Baker, the CEO, they didn't write blank checks, but they were just saying, go for your life, go for your hardest, and we'll back you in. And obviously a really great group of people, obviously bought some experience in, bought partners in who, I've got a real philosophy of you want partners, especially in modernization spaces, who actually make you better than leave. And that was one of the really great things I think we did at Bendigo. As well as that simplification stuff, we actually implemented a new lending platform as well. We actually described that we composed it. So we used 82% of the APIs existed already. So we basically built the workflow in Komonda to actually put it together. And we saw a real turnaround in the business. So in our broker business, we sort of saw double the growth in that area once we put the system in, which was really nice. And obviously a smaller organization, you can sort of see and touch the parts. So where at NAB, it was probably you're just dealing with such large teams and that it was sometimes difficult to get your arms around what was going on. So yeah, I was really, really happy with the sort of tech outcomes, but more importantly, probably the business outcomes that we're able to achieve there. So
I think that's a big thing, actually. As you go up the chain from a technology perspective, it becomes less about technology, more about how technology influences the business outcomes.
Yeah.
Do you still have a passion around the technology side? Do you like to still tinker in that technology side or be abreast of what tools you're using? Or is it now, how do these tools affect business outcomes?
Yeah, I actually said this to Bernadette when I was having a chat to them about the NGM opportunity, to say, I don't think there's such a thing as technology strategy. I think there's a business strategy that technology enables. Yeah. And I sort of spoke about that yesterday with the senior leaders at NGM. So do I like tinkering in technology? No, I don't. Do I like delivering business outcomes and finding a great team to help support that? It's my passion. I love doing that. And yeah, I clearly am a bit interested in technology, but I'm no coding geek on the weekend or anything like that. I've had people say to me before, for the amount of time you talk about people and you talk about teams and how teams are working, I'm surprised you're a technologist. So yeah, that's what I think is really important. It's about the team, whether it be the technology team or how the tech team is working with our business stakeholders to get results.
We're going down some tangents here, but I'm liking where we're going. Mate, it's something that comes up with our advice, and I'm sure you're exactly the same, where technologists are growing through their career. They start technical, they might be in a software engineering space, and they get that conjuncture point in their careers where they decide, do they want to continue to go down an architect route or a really technical route, or do they start to look at that team management part? And both roles are not for everyone.
Right.
Some people don't like team management, don't like the people side of it. Some people just want to focus purely on the engineering side and love being in the code. Mate, do you have advice that you give to people that are coming through their careers in making that decision?
Yeah, I think the easy one is do what you love. So if you love coding, for God's sakes, keep doing it. And certainly we've faced into it in a number of organisations where we pay great engineers more than we do people leaders. It's not a natural progression. We need to understand the value of great engineers, and because we all know that the really good ones can do the same amount of work. They can do it in a tenth of the time because they're great engineers. So, yeah, I think you can get it really wrong if you don't follow the rule is what is your passion.
Yeah.
Be great at it.
Yeah, and I think that there's been a real positive change over the last 5 years has been those more senior engineering roles paying more.
Yeah.
Where in the past, I think you had to go down team management to continue to grow your career.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, it's nice. Mate, one more on the financial services side of things. Biggest challenge for you playing in the financial service, is it just, again, the scale of things, or is it obviously you've been a smaller cog in a big wheel at NAB, and then you've gone big cog in a smaller wheel at Bendigo and now at NGM. Biggest challenges that you face in financial service industry or banking industry?
I think it's like any change or there's just plenty of learnings as you go through it. I learned some really good lessons at NAB about, you know, we're putting core banking changes in about every 2 years, and because of the huge amount of integrations, you know, yeah, it was insanely complex. But what I learned and took to Bendigo is to say, if we're not dropping value every 3 months, even with lending systems, which I think the lending system at NAB had 183 interfaces that you had to get all working together to actually drop it into production. Wow. At Bendigo, it was 182. So it actually shows that scale, even Bendigo's one-tenth the size, the complexity and scale is still the same. So I sort of look at, yeah, as I said, those being able to coordinate the orchestra and the teams who are doing that through testing, through release management and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, being able to drop that value in, number one, gives our business colleagues confidence in us being able to continually deploy, but it actually gets them fitter at receiving change as well. So, I think that there's something I call transformation fitness, which is where's your ability, and not in a CX sense, but in a really core hard sense, back into the depths of these systems, what's your ability like to be able to drop in regular things that are making change happen, even if they might be stepping some things back to be much better in the future. Yeah. So, but yeah, integrations are the I still look at. I used to have some golden rules at NAB in the core, which is every integration costs you $1 million a year in major program costs. So yeah, wow. It's just that's your starting point. Yeah, so wow. Yeah, it's good fun. Good fun.
No, mate. Challenge is always fun, right?
Yeah.
Mate, the other commonality in that career, especially the more recent careers, obviously Bendigo and mm-hmm. now NGM, mm-hmm. both regional. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about your passion around regional. You talked about, you know, growing up in regional. You yeah. talked about your sister, but bringing yeah. you to NGM.
Yeah, so probably my favourite story about Bendigo was about... Well, 6 months before I left, or probably a bit more than that actually, but we'd won this Asia Pac Award by MongoDB for innovation from a Bendigo perspective. And I had MongoDB's chief revenue officer, Cedric Peach, ring me from, he's a French guy based out of Rome, rang me and said, oh, we've chosen you as one of four banks globally to run an experiment using generative AI to, we think we can migrate workloads quicker to our databases and to cloud, and we want your team to run an experiment with us. And I sort of go, mate, why are you calling us a little C2 bank in Australia? Like, you must have, you know, Barclays, HSBC, all those guys. And he said, no, we like dealing with you guys because you can actually make stuff happen and you won't get caught up in your own wheel. So I said to him, okay, so here's the deal. Number one, you have to come to the region to do it. So while we had our office in Melbourne, I said, you have to come into Bendigo, fly your people in there. Number two is there's to be no PowerPoints. Number three is that if there's any sign of this not getting to prod, I'm scrapping it. So if I'm smelling that it's getting theoretical or anything like that, we're going to scrap the whole thing. And he said, Andrew, you're a very direct man. But anyway, so the guys came over in December. A couple of guys from Cayman Islands, Germany, UK. We took them into Bendigo. Some of the guys actually took them out spotlighting and all this other stuff as well, but with the real country experience. But it's that classic thing of getting, we had three of our best. They had three or four of their best globally. And after about 2 weeks, we'd sort of worked out how we could migrate from certain databases to Mongo and the, you know, the Mongo guys are really happy with themselves. So we've nailed this with generative AI, and our team said to them, well, that's really interesting, the database. The hard one's the application. Can you help us with that? And then so they spent another 4 or 5 weeks and actually created using generative AI and tested them against a number of the hyperscalers, found a way of, number one, creating a regression test suite that could be created in minutes rather than days. By getting someone to run through that and look at the TCP IP logs to determine what they've done. So created a full regression suite for some of these really old applications that no one was really sure what was going on. Then create documentation for systems that hadn't had documentation before, so it was able to look at the calls and how it worked between the application and the databases. And then actually do a code migration and upgrade of the code and rewrite of the code. We found that part, it would get about 90% correct, and then we'd have to get an SME to have a look at it. But if you look at that, we'd sort of go, well, that's sort of reducing our migration times by about 9/10 from a refactor perspective as well. So the other thing it was doing, it was not just rewriting the code, it was actually, we used our APIs as the LLMs for the code. So it's actually rewriting it in an API way. So completely modernizing the app. And so, yeah, we sort of, I came back from holidays in January and Cedric had somehow got on my diary my first day back, which was credit to him. And he just sort of said, your team, we've smashed it. We've actually got a world first use case here that has never been used. So yeah, Ash Austin and I got invited over to their sales kickoff event. So 4,000 people in Vegas, on stage talking about what we'd done in this little regional bank in Bendigo, which is great recognition, but from there the team have gone on and they're using that method and approach to, you know, migrate payments. So yeah, there's just lots of I sort of look at that and say there's some people walking around Bendigo pretty proud, you know, and know that they're world class, and yeah, that's what I'm hoping to do here at Nui, and yeah, just unleash the people and unleash the capability.
Yeah, I love it. I love not only it'd be something significant if Australia did it on a world first stage, but let alone a little place like Bendigo.
Yeah, it's neat.
Key thing you mentioned there, like to get an international partner, a lot of organisations spend a lot of money on partners. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
You've made that work on a world stage. Mm-hmm. Sounded like you brought them, you made a thing that they had to actually come and be on site with you.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like there was some bonding experiences between your team and theirs going out spotlight for the same. Maybe you had advice to any other technology leaders, how to get the most out of your partnerships.
Mm.
Any advice in general?
So one of the things that Google and AWS is so is at Bendigo, the most important thing for us as regionals is to be ourselves, to be regional. And there was this place in Bendigo called the Wine Bank, and there were many nights spent at the Wine Bank. We were drinking wine, but we had Shaw McIntosh, one of our evangelists of APIs, who is a great musician. And we used to go there with the Googles or whoever's and whoever our partners were and just, you know, sit along and drink wine and sing, a very country thing to do. But the amount of people that just go, this doesn't happen anywhere else. Yeah. This is true country. This is true regional. This is having fun, having a laugh at ourselves. And then people want to work on your account because you're not only innovative and capable, you're actually fun.
Yeah.
I sort of look at that as something that's why I love regional too, is I just find people are a lot more authentic.
Yeah.
And all of those partners like working with authentic people. There's when you're dealing with big procurement teams and banks and people with massive egos, it's who enjoys that?
Yeah.
You know,
I feel like regional leads into building a depth of relationship.
Yes.
And as you mentioned the word authenticity there, I think it really makes a difference as opposed to Sydney, big for Australia's sake, small on an international scale, but more transactional.
Yeah, exactly.
And
it's
about, you know, the dollar who's spending the most, and then they probably get the most attention from the bigger partners as opposed to building that depth of relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. So big success in Bendigo, and now you've started NGM.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a vision for what you're trying to achieve?
Oh, we have a vision for making the business better. So
yeah. I love that. Straight from technology, straight into business.
Yeah, exactly. So NGM's, you know, the leading mutual at the moment. We've got a great exec leadership team there. From a tech perspective, we've got some big things to deliver this year and, you know, really aggressive cloud push. And it's not about cloud. It's actually about our mindset change to move faster for our customers. But, yeah, we've got plenty to deliver. It will follow a similar path to what we've done at Bendigo, because I think most organisations are saying, how do we simplify? How do we simplify so we're easier to deal with? And that takes all at all levels, applications, everything. And then how do we modernise? How do we use new tools and capabilities so that we can respond quicker? Because if you look just what happens with Trump recently, who knew 6 months ago that the world would be in the position we're in now? So our job is to help our business be able to respond really quickly to changes. And that's what we're going to do.
We're talking about two rather large organizations that have come together over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Both have legacy technology.
Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest challenge in around dealing with that? Is it the bringing together? Is it just the sheer volume of legacy that you've got there? What's the biggest challenge or opportunity, I guess, also for walking into an environment like that?
I was actually talking to a number of people. We're having a bit of a cloud workshop yesterday. I actually think it's about belief. The thing is how much quicker you can go with cloud. And I was talking about a team, the customer master team at NAB that we had. And we had someone come in and say, let's move it to the cloud. And our team came back and said, oh, that's going to be 12 months. And he said, no, it's going to take a month. And you're thinking all the 5 million customers of NAB in this huge. And 3 months later, it was on the cloud. And I sort of sat around with my team and I said, what do we learn from this? Like, I'm feeling a bit humbled, and I'm sort of a bit embarrassed, actually. And they said, we didn't realize the potential.
Yeah.
And so, it's just about having some people who believe and sitting alongside the people who have learnt and sort of become skeptical, I guess, of could this really get that much better?
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. It's belief. Belief we can make things a lot faster, a lot better, and we can surprise ourselves how quickly we can do that.
Nice. If another leader's walking into a similar situation and you had to provide them advice in changing belief, which I'm assuming falls in that cultural piece, how do you go about changing that belief? Is it getting some small wins along the way and small wins early and then changing that culture? Is it leading from the front? Is it bringing in other experienced people that have all done that before and have that different mindset?
Yeah, I think it is. So it's being really human about it. One of the things I really enjoyed about the cloud program at Bendigo, Lauren Benedict was this lady's name. When I spoke to the board at Bendigo for the first time, they said, what do you think of the capability of this team? Because the previous person didn't rate them. And I said, I actually think they just need to be unleashed. So Lauren called the cloud program the unleashed, but underneath it, she described it as building cloud confidence. And I really loved that because it showed the human side of we're all a bit scared. This is all a bit scary. Let's be vulnerable ourselves and do the regional thing.
Yeah.
Talk about it. Yeah. Have some sessions about it. And we're in the middle of COVID, so we actually had these sort of Friday afternoon drinks where people would talk about their mistakes they've made on cloud. And it's, once again, a very regional country thing to do, that there is no silverbacks allowed. Like, you'd basically have this thing, oh, can't believe I did this. And that sort of started ground up with a couple of engineers and sort of, I think it started with 6 engineers and ended up at 270. Just people talking about what they'd learned. So, I think it is enabling our people, but being very human about, learning something new is very personal. And you need great leaders who are prepared to roll their sleeves up and have a go themselves. Great partners who we spend a lot of time finding partners who would teach the owners, work alongside us and then go, as soon as they could see that we're right, they'd disappear and say, we've got other things to do. So, which is countercultural to most.
As opposed to trying to build another day, another project. Right. Yeah. I don't think that's a sign of a good partner there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two parts you mentioned there that I really heard, I think, was the opportunity to fail.
Mm.
Not that we're celebrating failure, but it's okay to fail because part of learning is failing. Yeah, right?
Exactly.
And then the other part you mentioned, unleash, so actually like empowering people to achieve.
Yeah.
And I think some people get put in their boxes and you don't know what they could actually achieve if they were given that, opportunity to do so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, nice. Mate, you've referenced new technology and you referenced AI before. I nearly jumped down the thread. I was like, AI question's coming. But I am really keen to get your understanding. AI is obviously, the theme of the day at the moment in technology. It's continuing to evolve pretty fast. I think people are using it at varying levels from, dabbling with some ChatGPT to some companies out there who have some, agents actually working out there for them. Where do you see AI playing its role in the NGM journey?
Yeah, so we've got a number of use cases already underway. So a really cool one with our partners is in our contact centers. So the system is listens to what the conversation is going on, and then we'll be providing prompts on screen about policies or possible answers for them. So just fantastic. Super acceleration of especially of new people into our contact centers. Then at the end of the call, it actually summarizes the call, writes it in the summarized notes.
Beautiful.
Which is just unbelievable. So yeah, I sort of look at that and go, that's pretty great technology.
That's mass efficiencies for a size of a, you know, call center team that you'd have on.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then we're using it in the normal, I think the number one financial services use case for AI is in legal, you know, contract summaries, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, tick that one. I think the sort of medium term, it's going to be about hyper personalization of CX. But yeah, we're certainly, are testing with as I said, with some really cool use cases, which are helping our customer experiences, which I think is a really good place to start.
Yeah, I think, and we're on that journey of replacing fear of AI with actually people seeing how it's improving their, you know, their interactions with organizations, they're improving their efficiencies. It's actually seeing real positive use cases as opposed to, I don't know much about AI. It's a robot's going to come and kill me.
Yeah, and well, it's actually really funny because you speak to the team in the contact center. You go, well, how good is this AI? And they're going, what AI?
Yeah.
And so they just say, well, this is just our, you know, it's, yeah. So it is interesting, that sort of label, isn't it?
It's another piece of technology, right? And yeah. I think there's some interesting takes around the job market with AI, because I think call center are a big part. People are taking about, you know, voice agents taking over, and the call centers won't exist. And that may happen in the future. But for now, what it's doing is making call center jobs significantly more efficient, making their jobs easier, they're providing a better service. So at the moment, it's really having a positive effect on that market. And then it may be a piece of technology that takes over that market at some point.
Yeah, exactly. And the idea is to roll with it, understand it, and take the opportunity to help our customers and community.
Yeah, well, I think most other technologies that have come across nowadays there's been fear around that taking all the jobs away, but it's actually creating more jobs as well, right?
Exactly.
The old infrastructure engineers of the old days are now DevOps engineers and are working from that spot.
Or great cyber engineers. I've seen so many move from that mid-range engineering area into cyber, and their skills are just perfectly adapted to that. So, yeah.
And another growth area, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Very nice. AI outside of banking, do you have any thoughts on where we're sitting at the moment, where you see it's going? Where would you be teaching your children to play?
I had a situation recently where Nick, my stepson, he's doing mechanical engineering, and he had to program a stoplight, and he couldn't work out how to do it, and I didn't know how to code Python. So I said, mate, just jump on ChatGPT and describe the problem and get it to code it in Python. And he was surprised. He came back to me the following days going, mate, you're actually better than I thought you were. I was there to go on the lecture who worked that one out, and I sort of said to him, yeah, it's just sad that the lecture's not teaching you how to use command prompts for your programming, because that's what we'll be expecting you to do when you come out of uni. So yeah, it's I think there's obviously loads of opportunities there. We just need to find out the best ones and get onto them.
Mate, and you've just opened the door to one of my favorite questions. Mate, technology professionals, there's various ways you can get into a technology career. There are some people that grow up tinkerers, there are people that are coding from early ages. There's people that just fall into it later. Some other people start in adjacent fields and fall in technology.
Just personally, like, I have no formal qualifications. So my career was really, I did 2 years in computer operations, 2 years in LAN support, desktop support, help desk, you know, tech services, all that sort of stuff, and studied at TAFE. And then I got to the last two subjects at TAFE, which was plan your career. And I was one of my senior roles in Adelaide, although I'm not doing that. And then business maths, and I'm not going to do that. So I sort of look at it. There was a whole heap of practical stuff that I did learn there, and the programming side and all that sort of stuff, which I was able to use immediately. And I think that's the challenge. How do we get that practical stuff out of the TAFEs, both in the TAFEs and the unis.
Yeah, I think all forms of education, right? Because that technology is moving so quick at the moment to change an educational system, or the whole, you know, theory behind a 3-year degree. Like, how quickly can we change? How quickly can we stay up? So I think that's where it comes back to, A, learning core concepts, and B, learning how to learn. And I think that does really play strong from a university perspective, like teaching people how to problem solve.
Yep.
And that problem solving part is probably the biggest skill, I think, in the future of technology or future of any job.
Completely agree.
Role is 100% in what you mentioned right at the start. Like, your role is not as a technology expert, it's more as a problem solver from a business perspective. How does technology problem solve those business challenges?
Yep.
Mate, you didn't go down the formal educational route, but I imagine your career is full of ongoing learnings. You've changed your roles, those roles have evolved over time. How have you gone about future-proofing yourself or growing your career? Is there external resources, external trainings that you've gone through? Is there recommendations that you'd make for others?
Certainly about one of the things that I always did is find the hardest problem that no one wanted to go near and go after it.
I love
this. So there was multiple times where people say, there's no way we can do that, but there's no way we can fix that. You know, I'd sort of go, let's have a go. And just get a group of people to say, once again, it gets back to that belief thing, is to say, let's have a go at this because it's really impacting the business. So I think that's one. I think the other one is there are mentors and clever people everywhere. You just need to listen out for them. And I sort of have people that I there's a lady, Claire Barrett, who's actually now based out of the UK, who is so insanely intelligent, that's beyond belief. But I find those people are really generous with their times if you're curious. And, you know, certainly with the API, Claire's taught me a lot about APIs and the capability and what that brings from a banking perspective. And, yeah, I've always found insanely intelligent people are generous, really generous with their time. If you can describe problems and work through some options with them. So, yeah, I think there's my number one bit of advice is go find the hard projects and make them work. That's something I've really has undoubtedly completely changed my or completely allowed my career to grow at the rate it did, which is deliver hard stuff over and over and over again. And then in order to do that, you need to build some resilience, you need to build grit, and you need to have a knack of finding the right people and the balance of the teams that make it work. So, yeah, I think if someone said that I had a superpower, it's actually the ability to create the right teams and those teams are high-performing teams. They're not kumbaya, we all love each other type things. Yeah. It's diverse thinking, diverse approach, authentic and aligned people.
I like it. Yeah, there's three parts in there. I'm going to pull apart.
Yeah.
The people part continues to come up in your conversations. Mm-hmm. Right then, you mentioned building the right team below you,
mm-hmm.
but also the mentorship above you.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's approaching a mentor, approaching somebody more senior than them, because I think you bang on the money with people will give you the time if mm-hmm. you come to them with you mentioned an actual problem. It's not an open-ended question. How do I change my career? Mm-hmm. It's a, hey, I've got this problem. You've done it before. How do I fix that and problem solve together?
Yeah.
Is that your approach for, or an advice for others?
Yeah, but when I was talking about mentors, I wasn't actually talking about people above. I was talking about people three departments away or whatever. So, yeah, when I was thinking about it, I was, and in a lot of cases, there are people who actually worked for me in different areas where I just say, have you got a different approach to this? Because our traditional isn't seeming to work. Can you work through that? So, yeah, I think that's, that's what I was really talking about.
Yeah, nice. Second part, you mentioned you're building teams under you.
Mm-hmm.
Technology has changed so quickly. I think when we're looking for a particular skill set, it might work for now, but you know that things change quickly and they might not be the right person in the future. You've hired so many different roles. Are there core personality traits that you look for in the people that you surround yourself with?
Yeah, number one has to be authentic. Like, just a ticket to the game is really, really important because, and this, you had a question later about what's a software tool you use daily. wouldn't say a software tool, but an approach I use daily or in our meetings is to make sure we've got unstructured time to talk about how we're going, to once again authentically talk about how we're going. So in our planning days, we always have a couple of hours just put aside to say, no agenda, how are we going? What do I need to work on as a team, as individuals? And quite often someone will put their hand up and say, I'm really struggling with this. And quite often the problem will be solved by everyone else knowing that, you know, and so it's that, yeah, authenticity, teamwork.
Providing the platform to ask questions.
Yeah,
You mentioned it earlier on about providing the opportunity to fail. Now you mention it again in providing the opportunity to be like, I've got a problem here. Yeah. How do we solve it?
Yeah, exactly. And in financial services, complex ecosystems, it's really hard. Like the tech leaders, people leaders, architects, jobs really hard. And so what we need to be able to have is people we can count on to support but also challenge us to be our best. So yeah, I think that's the real, for me, the really important thing, because as I said earlier, I think technology is a people business.
Completely agree. The other part you mentioned just before, you mentioned the word grit and resiliency. Mm-hmm. Being the CIO of a large bank definitely would come with some work-life balance challenges. Mm-hmm. I imagine some mental health challenges around being really busy. How do you switch off? You mentioned grit, resiliency. How do you work on yourself? What practices do you put in place so you bring your best version to work each day?
Yeah, so Kate, my wife, and I like exercising. So it's not quite the 5 a.m. club, but it's usually the 5:30 club where we go off and do some exercise. And we're our best human beings when we get that exercise in early in the day and sort of have that habit. I think from that grit and resilience is, once again, it goes back to the team, is to say, how do you have a group of people? And this is the team of technology leaders who are looking out for each other and saying, are you okay? You know, like, I had one last week where I've sort of said, I think you've got your priority stuffed up. Yeah. I think you need to be at home. You know, like, you're exhausted. Like, yeah. let's just do it. So, yeah, I think that's really important, because, yeah, certainly in fin services at leadership levels of all, if you've got there, it's because you're not short on drive.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's just, yeah, looking out for each other. But there is a thing about an ability, and I think about probably the hardest thing I've done in my career is that 5 years of the core banking stuff at NAB is just to go, we've just got to keep going. And I sort of like in core banking exercises, like genuine, like a marathon. I've done a number of marathons, and like, if you've done marathons, what is the most enjoyable is actually a training, like running 1,000 Ks.
0 to 30 Ks is okay.
other days, a different thing altogether.
30 Ks on good.
Yeah, that's all. But that's also what core banking programs are like. Yeah. A bit is it, there's a fair bit of 32 to 42 Ks in there. Oosh. But I think having those, that ability to say we will get there, we believe we'll get there, and that's one of the most important things.
Yeah, you mentioned it earlier as well. We're tackling the hardest project, right? That's been one of your big career successes. And I feel like that feeds 100% straight into that grit and resiliency, right? Like, if you're going to tackle hard projects, you're probably going to fail.
Yep.
Or fail multiple times to get to that end result. Again, feeds into your marathon approach. Is that looking at the long game? Does that help with you building resiliency?
Yeah. I think, like, when I went into NGM and we were discussing some options and that sort of stuff with a small group of people about where we move forward on some parts, I started off with how many core banking programs you failed, because I reckon I'll win. You know, yeah. So, and it's really important, once again, to highlight, to say, that's where you get your learnings from. So I think you had another question here is, where have you learned from failure or something like that? I remember when I was at IAG, there was a guy called Richard who works in my network center, and we were doing a contact center replacement, and we stuffed it up completely. Didn't do enough business engagement, focused too much on the tech, completely messed it up. And then I went to NAB about 18 months later, and I said, oh, we need to do a contact center replacement. I rang up Richard and said, mate, I need you for a contact center. And he goes, mate, I stuffed it up completely. And they go, yeah, I know. You won't do it twice.
Yeah.
And that program at NAB at the time was, for the next 2 years, seen as the best program we had because he learned from it.
Yeah.
And we made sure we engaged the business really, really often and regularly, and they felt really a part of it. And I think that's really important to do that, is to say, just because you got it wrong once doesn't mean you're never going to do it again. Or, yeah, you'll learn and we'll be better.
Yeah, and I think the reasons your teams have some success from that comes from the top down, that you walk into an environment and you'll be like, I've failed this more than anyone else here. So I feel like it comes from the top down, right? If you're actually sitting there and you're owning your mistakes,
yeah,
no leader's perfect.
Yeah.
But rather than sit, you know, pie in the sky, it's like, I've failed as well. And then the teams feed off that and they then feel like they can own their values along the way as well.
Yeah, exactly. And once again, it just gets back to that authentic regional, you know, there's themes here.
Yep. Yeah, nice. You mentioned the tool. You've mentioned like what you use in meetings. Is there anything else that you help from a productivity perspective in you managing your time? At the moment, you're living between two different states at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of flights involved, a lot of meetings involved, a lot of after hours, before hours. How do you manage life?
Certainly it is about... there are times where I just need to manage my energy levels, and I'm pretty. I remember mentoring someone, and Sarah Prider, her name was, and she just started in a leadership role, and I said, "How are you going?" And she said, "I've had enough. I had enough this morning." And I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "I was just grumpy with my team. I've been pushing him too hard. I was grumpy at home. So I decided to have the morning off." I said, "Really?" And she goes, "And I don't even feel guilty about it." I said, "Okay." I said, "Yeah, my job's done." And she goes, "What?" And I said, "Well, you've actually got a self-regulation mechanism now that you know you can't keep going like you want. That's all I needed from you to know that you would be successful." So
that self-awareness is phenomenal.
Yeah, it is. So yeah, certainly I had forgotten how traveling does actually really does hit you and I've been really careful with my maintaining my connection with family and also being easy on myself. There are some mornings that I'm not getting up for gym because I'm just too tired, and I, you know, be gentle on yourself I think that's a really important thing to be self-aware.
No, I think that self-awareness part and just being, yeah, there are seasons for pushing hard. There are times for pushing hard. There are times where you need to, you know, let off.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Mate, you mentioned the word marathon before. You've mentioned exercise. Any big goals on the horizon for yourself?
To become less fat than I am now. I need to – my 5K times isn't where they need to be. And I just love running out to the end of the breakwater. Although I saw that rogue wave the other week, I keep my eyes peeled on the horizon for that. But I just absolutely love this place and love running out to the breakwater and back in the morning. And so there's plenty of opportunities to keep fit. And I don't have another marathon planned for a little while, but enjoying the lifestyle.
Oh, nice. Man, wrapping up, we're getting closer wrapping up. For younger tech professionals, somebody considering career in technology,
mm-hmm.
any one piece of career advice that you would give them?
I think the thing is, do the hard projects, find the hard things that no one wants to do and make them work and listen for mentors who listen to how people talk in different ways and be curious and as I said, the smartest people I've ever worked with are always I've found them always really generous with their time. So ask for advice, listen for the people who are going to make you better, and do hard projects.
Nice. Mate, it sounds like you've got some big aspirations with NGM Group. I know you're building your team at the moment. If people are keen to work under the leadership of Andrew Crasp, how would they go about that?
So we're pretty active on LinkedIn and Seek at the moment. So I don't know how many jobs are out there, but we don't have. There's certainly not all out there at the moment. We want to employ in Newey or around from Newey. So, or, you know, in the area. So yeah, please have a look on LinkedIn. We've got a whole lot of work we're doing over the next 2 to 3 years, and yeah, I think it's going to be a great role working for a fantastic organisation.
Yeah, I think the opportunities there are fantastic. I think the opportunities and some of the roles are really exciting. So exciting opportunities for NGM on the horizon.
Cool.
I appreciate your time today. If people are keen to follow your journey, you're on LinkedIn.